Ready? Everybody ready?
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to tonight's April 8, 2024 regular city council meeting. Now, if you would all please rise for a short private invocation asking for God's blessing upon this city and wisdom as our city council makes its decisions tonight. And now, if you'll please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let's move to item 1D, which is the citizen input portion of our city council meeting. I'd like to recognize any member of the public who'd like to address the city council tonight. Okay, seeing none, we'll move to item 1E, roll call. And I'll mention that all city council members are present. Now I'd like to move to approval of the agenda tonight.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Let's move to our consent agenda. And I'll note that 3C was the correction of the language of that ordinance for design standards. We got sanitary sewer instead of water now.
Yeah. I read through it. It looked good.
Okay. So with that, I'd like to entertain a motion to approve tonight's consent and agenda.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Now I'd like to move to our current business. And tonight there is a presentation to our Public Works Director, Kurt Carpenter. Or would you like to come up, please? Tonight, we're going to recognize Kurt. He's been recognized nationally from PlayCor. So the first question is, who is PlayCor? PlayCor Center for Outreach, Research, and Education, CORE, acronym for CORE, leads the National Demonstration Site Network as an important effort to raise national awareness, recognize projects of excellence, and help local communities demonstrate the positive impact they're making on community vitality. National demonstration sites use comprehensive and validated research to provide a unique way to organize and report the indicators of a vital community. On behalf of PlayCor, they have recognized Iron Horse Playground Adventure, located at Lions Park as a national demonstration site. The City of Othello Playground is being recognized as a project of excellence that aligns with their evidence-based, design-based practices that meet the criteria to become a PlayCor national demonstration site. There are five design best practice programs that help communities turn research into practice. Being designated as a national demonstration site shows that the city thoughtfully advocates for inclusive play, youth physical activity, adult outdoor fitness, nature play, and playful pathways. Othello's Park Iron Horse Playground Adventure is part of an important and growing network of community representatives who are dedicated to advancing play and recreation through best practices. And Othello's involvement in the network will help in documenting community outcomes and sharing key learning at the site and collectively across the United States of America. Kurt Carpenter, Public Works Director for the City of Othello, has received national recognition for this new playground that he helped create and design. Although it's not finished, it will be finished soon. And tonight, I want to present to Kurt this national award for the Iron Horse Playground Adventure from PlayCor. Congratulations, Kurt. Now let's move to item 4B in our agenda, and that is the approval of a resolution. Oh, sorry. I'm trying to hurry this along. I'm sorry, Kurt. He was going to give the project status on the number of things that the city is working on. Yeah, you have to speak. You have to bring it close to your mouth.
There it is. Evening, Council. My privilege to update on the Iron Horse Playground. The contractor that is a certified installer has begun work again this week. They have the adult exercise equipment to install on the outside, the shade structure. Some of the landscaping touches need to be finished. It's a different company. And then subgrade needs to be graded out under the equipment, compacted, and then the control, the crush surfacing placed to the grade and compacted prior to the pour in place. Rubber that goes down as the safe surface, finishing surface, and that surface requires 40 degrees and above temperatures. That's one of the reasons they haven't been here yet, is we haven't reached those consistent temperatures. So within a week or so, we should be able to reach those temperatures. So we are shooting sometime in May, weather permitted, having the opening ceremonies, ribbon cutting for the playground and the basketball courts. So we'll keep you updated on the progress of the playground. There's a lot of graphics that go into hand place graphics in that pour in place surfacing. And I think once you see the completed project, you'll understand why it took so long to put the rubber surfacing in place. We designed in a lot of graphics in that. So it's going to be quite a facility. I do want to thank everybody that's been involved in it. I'm the landscape architect that's been involved in designing Wildwood. Playgrounds has been involved 100% in the design with the safety designs. Council's been involved in this. Many city staff, the manufacturer of the playground equipment's been involved in this. This is one of the largest all-inclusive playgrounds in Washington and in the U.S. It's a phenomenal playground for this area, and I'm excited for the citizens to get to use it as much as they're excited to play on it. Any questions, I'll be glad to answer.
Yeah, congratulations, Kurt. Also notice that on the handout to the council, there was this code. What do you call these codes? QR code, yeah. There's a QR code that's going to be at the playground, and you'll be able to know about interactive features with the park and with the playground park. And also, it's going to provide information as they do more research on playgrounds to make them safer, more inclusive, and more fun for the kids and the families that participate. So this is a tremendous award, and I just want to thank you, Kurt. Maybe you could run down then the rest of the projects that Public Works Department's involved in.
Sure. I will run down some of the priority ones we have. I provided the council with a list they could look at. We do have 42 major projects on our list this year. Some of them have rolled over from past, but we do have our plate full. But I want to run through some updates. Lions Park Connectivity Trail, that's Project 2105, it was completed in nearing 1 year maintenance. We do have some items that they need to redo on street markings and some settled items along the trail. Lions Park Iron Horse Adventure, I just updated you on that. Lions Park Baseball Court, or Basketball Court, Baseball Courts, Basketball Courts, were completed, and we're nearing working on a punch list currently, checking irrigation with the contractor on that. I think today they started looking at some of that stuff. Water conservation system, the irrigation system that we received a grant for, which is two pump stations, one on Lee and 14th, and one at 14th in McFarland's, where their irrigation pump is, that will complete those two systems that we've been installing. That's in design and specification phases, so that should be going out here shortly. The water SCADA 2022, which was basically the telemetry upgrading for our wells, well sites. All the wells are online. We do have well six controls, which was a change order for well six. We were waiting for the materials to complete that portion of it. Lions Park Picnic Shelters, I completed the design. The structures themselves are on hold due to funds possibly being relocated for the dog facilities. Lions Park Electrical Upgrade 2024. The contractor's working on that. Installing the schedule will be completed before April 24th. That portion took all the power from the ball fields and everything that are on the north service and put it on a meter. It's never been on a meter. So Vista upgraded that, replaced the pole, put that on a meter, and then all of the direct bury wire that went to both of the shelters that we took down and to the skate hockey rink and the parking lot on the north side, that was all direct bury. So we're getting rid of all that. It's all going in conduit, and we're serving 240 locations and power to the new shelters, moving the existing old service that was close to the playgrounds across the trail. So it will provide two locations for the stage in the park, and everything will be in conduit in the park. So everything will be upgraded. The tennis court lighting will be back on. We'll be able to put in the same system that we have on the ball courts, baseball field. So we're upgrading all those lighting to controls off a cell phone, which will help with policing and power savings and man hours. Let's see. Kiwanis Park, We have four projects slated for the Kiwanis Park, the park trail, which is the existing trail, upgrading that, putting lighting in. And that is it. We're working on, Cameron's working on design and bid documents for that to go to the state for review. Splash pad, that's under design. And I can't think of what's the company's name. Northwest Playgrounds is doing the design work, and they've submitted to Department of Health for approval on that. And we are also receiving items being shipped to us for that as well. Putzall Court is in design and bid document stages, in progress for submittal to state for review. The park restroom, which is the oldest restroom in the park, which is on the north side of the park. I'm working on the design and the bid documents for submittal for the state review, hoping to submit those by the end of the week. Public Works steel structure lean-to project 2414. We have the fence modifications and gates. I combined that into two projects into one for the fuel tanks and then for the back of Public Works. That's near completion. We just have the electronic gates to install on Public Works 2 for the fuel tanks. And I'm working on the design to submit for design build on that, hoping to get that out by the end of the month. Fuel tanks, we have the concrete containment in place. The gates are all installed except for the electronics and the power. Fuel tanks are on site. We're ready to set them. We're waiting for the concrete to set another week before we set them in there. And the power quotes for doing all that are due on April 17th. The park's office remodel, crew's working on the interior finish and trim out. The exterior metal finishes, we're waiting for materials on that. Parking lot, sidewalks, and drainage structures are in progress or grading. We've already placed some of the sidewalk in the front of the building. The parking lot was 3/10 above the floor, finished floor level, so I had to tear it all out and bring down all the water running into the building. So we're dropping that, repaving that parking lot and a strip through the fuel tanks, hoping to put those projects together to get a little better price. And then we'll wait for the landscaping. As soon as the sidewalks or we get those done, we can start working on the landscaping around the building. Crack seal project 2024, nearing completion and punch list. I think they've finished up today. And we'll start working on sinkers and punch list stuff here. Chip seal drawings are completed. Bid documents are in progress for the chip seal project. Restriping the entire city, the state. This will be the last year that they'll contract for us to do that. We've drawn up the drawings. We've submitted all the paperwork to get that. We're waiting for their schedule on that. And the Main Street decorative lighting project. Cameron and I have worked hard to figure out power routes. Got the design 99% complete. Bid documents are in progress. Working with Avista on a couple pole relocations. So I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Kurt, you said this is the last year Washington State's going to stripe for us contract?
Yeah, they have for the past. They have in the past.
Striped. Oh, they have forever. Oh.
This is the last year they won't do it anymore.
Why?
Just new management.
It's too bad. They do a pretty good job.
Any questions for Kurt?
Okay, now let's move to item 4B, which is approving a resolution authorizing application of RCO grants, YAF, youth athletic facilities, land water conservation, and WWRP.
Good evening. After a couple meetings with the Parks and Rec Committee and everything, we have settled back to applying for the grants, the first one being the Youth Athletic Facilities Grant, where we would replace the basketball courts at Kiwanis Park. They're utilizing now the tennis court as one, and then the semi-basketball court on the other. We would replace that with two new basketball courts and a third one being an all-inclusive basketball courts. There's some interesting ideas for those kids with special needs to be able to do basketball. So we're exploring that option. The second and third grant would be combined. We are looking at replacing the playground at Kiwanis Park. Currently, the one down there has reached its limit. Would not be the scale to what Lions Park is at, smaller scale. But along with that, we would look at redoing the parking lot on the north side, as there is not significant parking. I don't even, you know, it would address some of the lighting issues and things down there as well. With those grants, our portion would be a match requirement of $155,000 for all three projects. And we would be asking for $1.2 for the playground. And we would be asking for $350,000 for the basketball courts. With that, we need approval of a resolution to be able to apply, use the form specifically through Recreation and Conservation Office. So I just need council's approval on applying for the applications and the resolution.
City Council, do you have any questions for Sarah?
So this, unless I'm reading this wrong, one of the matches is $155,000, the other match is $120,000.
135
total. $35,000 is our match requirement for the basketball courts.
And the other one's 120.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where's that money coming from? We're running tight right now as it is.
Funding would not, YAF would not be awarded. None of these would be awarded until fall of this year. And YAF would be available in 2025. So we'd have to look at Parks and Rec Fund and see what's there. And then the other one being federal wouldn't even be awarded till 2026. So there is room to look at the budget the next couple of years to get those put in if we are awarded.
We could even say it set aside some monies for that for the next couple of years.
Never seems to work out. It doesn't. We set money aside and it just magically goes somewhere else. So what happens if we get the grants and don't have the money to do the match? Then we've got to turn the grants back.
More than likely, yeah.
So we just had a big discussion about turning grants back two years ago over the bulb outs. No, we can't turn grants back because then you don't get grants in the future.
Okay, that what you're talking about there, remember there was a mistake made with regard to the amount?
No, it was...
We only wanted a portion of the amount to be, you know, granted, but they granted us the whole amount.
No, I'm talking about when we did the bulb outs and there was some discussion between planning commission and the discussion. We had a big discussion about it and that was the final. We can't turn those grants back because then we don't get grants again.
But wasn't that grant? That grant wasn't that a co-grant between us and the school district?
No.
Yes.
That
about on 14th and 7th?
7th and Ash and 14th.
And if I can speak on that, because we came under budget on those, we actually ended up getting the grant covered at 100% on Ash Street and Scutney. We just submitted the final and we're under on that. And so they actually went back and looked at everything on Ash and reimbursed. So we didn't even have to build a school district on that. And it does not, it looks as though it may be the same for 14th and Scutney.
Questions?
Well, I guess the way I look at it is the city, the community, the families of the city would get $1.55 million in improvements, and it would cost the taxpayers $155,000 to do it.
Oh, I'm not questioning the projects at all. I think they're great projects. It's been in future money.
So can we build a place in the budget for those years for grant funding assist, you know? I mean, could it be a line item on its own?
Yeah, I mean, you mean the match?
Match,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where have you budgeted the matches in the past, Spencer?
So we have a few pots of money. Park and Rec funds that we can tap for that. One of these we would need a match next year, and the one after, and the other two we would need a match in 26. So we have time, I believe, to budget for those. If you want to move forward with the applications tonight, then I would automatically create a budget line for that expense and put it to the side. We would talk about it in our budget season next year, but I would already have a line there or something to show that those dollars are taken out of the discussion.
Any other questions, Council?
I'll make a motion to approve the attached resolution 2024-04 applicant resolution authorization related to applying for the Youth Athletic Facilities Land and Water Conservation Fund and Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program grant through Washington State Recreation and Conservation Office.
Okay. Further discussion? Or say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Let's talk about a Cinco de Mayo celebration. And tonight we have our Park and Recs coordinator, Valerie Hernandez. Valerie?
Hello. Good evening.
So, Valerie, could you get the microphone closer, please?
Yes. Okay. So, for Cinco de Mayo, we have already had a pre-meeting with the committee in regards to their application and fees and what their plans are. So the Cinco de Mayo committee requests to use the Lions Park for their first annual Cinco de Mayo celebration, event, and parade. So it's a combo, and they're wanting to make it a big day. It was something compared to the 4th of July, so it will be large-scale event. The event will take place Saturday, May 4th. It will kick off with the parade at 10 a.m. and the celebration to follow at the Lions Park. Set up activities at the Lions Park will take place the evening before, and that will be assisted by the Public Works staff, who will help them guide vendors in, because they did, they have an estimated attendance of 1,000 plus. So they will have informational vendors, food vendors, kids entertainment with the bounce houses and music entertainment. And throughout the event, they've assured that the music levels will not exceed those set forth by the city ordinance. So Public Works, with that meeting, Public Works will provide 4 staff members throughout the event that will help with garbage cans, any assistance that they need, or if they have any concerns throughout the day. So with the council's approval, the committee will enter into a facility use agreement with the city of Othello, and they will provide a certificate of insurance for the use of park facilities. They do request that they can, if they can use the vacant lot for porta potties. They did have it was a map that they provided to us that gave us an idea of where they would like to add extra porta potties, which they addressed in the additional items requested. They wanted to have different areas of facilities to be used or the porta potties to be used. So it's not just right all in the same area. They want to spread it out into the park. So again, before we go into that budget, we did meet, we did have a pre-meeting. We did talk to them about the additional costs, and they're aware that there is a $675 fee for the application for the special event, $520 for the damage deposit. And with their request of additional items, that's a total of $2,537, which results in a total of $3,732 for this event, if approved by council.
Question, City Council?
Is this a nonprofit that's doing this?
This is a nonprofit. They partnered with the City of Othello Rotary Club. So they are partnered with them, and they did apply for a grant to host a cultural event.
So part of that, the $2,537 additional fees, does that include public works wages?
Yes.
The fees for public works?
For setup fees, takedown fees, in addition to the porta potties, the bathroom, the porta potties with that scale that we approved now is the price that we pay directly from that company. So
the $2,537 covers all expenses.
Yes.
So this falls back on a nonprofit. It's a not this is a community-wide celebration. And it's a nonprofit. We should not be charging them the $675 event fee.
But they applied for a grant to cover the costs.
Okay, they can spend that grant on more things for their celebration. I really don't like the fact that the city's charging nonprofits that park use fee for community-wide celebrations. It's a nonprofit. It's a nonprofit entity. It's a park that's already paid for by the people of this community. This is an event for the people of this community. I don't like that $675 fee.
We've talked about that at Park and Rec.
Yeah, we have.
We have to draw a line. Who are we going to charge and who are we not going to charge? So if it's a public event, it's a benefit for the city, and then we say we're not going to charge anybody, and we don't put it down anymore. But one of the things is...
I'm fine with that. I don't believe we should be charging nonprofit to provide something for this community. Why would we charge a nonprofit entity?
But it comes down to the same thing we've discussed time and time again, is that if they're reserving the park for exclusive use of that festivity, that event, then they have to basically pay the fees to reimburse the people
they're not stopping anybody from using that park. It's not, hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on. It's not like the baseball where, you know, nobody gets to go play on the baseball because they're having a baseball game. Okay. This is a celebration for everybody to come enjoy this celebration.
So, Hillary, our city attorney, Hillary Evans, she might want to give us some guidance. Hillary, can you hear us?
Yep, absolutely.
Do you want to give us some guidance here, please?
Well, it's a hard thing to advise on. Let me see if I can get my video going. Can you see me now? It's a hard thing to advise on in the abstract. There's the prohibition against gifting of public funds. The second clause of that sentence is except the poor or infirm. So in some cases, you can waive fees legally for certain kinds of nonprofits. And certainly if it's a nonprofit that is providing a service the city would ordinarily provide and you truly partner in it, that can be acceptable. I do get concerned when the council adopts a resolution that establishes fees and then regularly waives those fees. To me, that indicates that the fee should be lower so that everyone pays it, or that maybe it's inappropriate to have fees at all. It sounds like the concern is that these are getting waived a lot, and you know, I don't think that's necessarily the intent, right? You adopted fees so that they could cover actual city costs, I would assume. And so they're there for a reason. And so if you're going to be waiving them more often than not, it sets a strange precedent. So
the only time we're waiving them is for nonprofits, for the holiday committees. There was the Easter egg hunt, the Christmas celebration. I think the car show. They're community-wide events that's using something that's already paid for by the community. And as far as covering fees, one of the things I asked, that there's $2,537 in other charges. That covers all costs. So this $675 is just a fee for them to lock out that park.
Yeah, I mean, you listed some things like car shows and Easter egg hunts and Christmas things. I wouldn't necessarily consider all of those to fit into the category of something that the auditor's office would very easily say is not a gift of public funds. I think that perhaps the thing to do would be to put a pin in waiving fees for now and go back and audit, you know, the historically how often you're actually collecting these fees and the kinds of organizations, and maybe create a policy, have staff create a policy, or revise your fee resolution to say, you know, if you are doing something for the public benefit, you can apply for a reduced rate, you know, make it a nominal fee. I think there's simply just better ways to do it. Nobody's trying to take money from a nonprofit organization that's doing good for the community, but it's more of the practice that's being established here that I think could use some evaluation.
So I'm going to jump on the part where you said, let's do a pin drop tonight. And that pin drop would likely be a waiver of these fees, but coming back with a policy that we can. And I think one of them was to, I know there was discussion in the committee that having the city administrator and the public works director and the park and rec coordinator approve these in the future, if we can establish a policy that everybody agrees on. Because right now, Corey he's not in agreement with what our fee schedule is, even though the committee was. And so tonight, but you've got the decision you need to make tonight, and then you have another decision of creating a policy that's going to take time to develop, but we're not going to get that done tonight. So for tonight, does anybody have any comment about tonight?
I think all that Corey's asking for is the removal of the 675. And that's what the city is asking for as a event fee. Just, you know, we're still going to bring in $3,159. $520 of that will be given back to them if we don't find anything wrong with the
no damage.
The facility, no damage.
Well, and the rest of it is straight pass-through fees for the costs of the, like the toilets and the
that's what it
hand
should
wash
be.
Stations.
And that's what it should be. And
so the 2537 includes the 520 for damages. Mm-hmm. That means they get back, you know, just
No.
They get back the 520.
The
yeah,
total.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
But it's 2537 plus 520.
So it's 3732 altogether, including
plus 675.
Yeah, you just got to take 675.
3732 is everything combined.
Yeah.
If you remove the 675, you get $3,157. So that's what they would pay.
I'll take a motion on that.
We waive it today, and then we take it, discuss it later.
Well, set a policy.
Set a
policy.
I think that's a good idea.
We've waived them before, so I motion to waive the 675 this time around, and we go to discussion with partners.
I think we could come up with something that if we have a worthwhile community event, that's being sponsored by a nonprofit organization that would involve all of the community, then they should be allowed to utilize public space.
Well, when you say that with a community event, and that's going to pretty much drop that pin and say they're waiving all the fees for that. All we're going to be charging is for the men that are the people at work, with, like, for example, or on staff right here, or whatever, you know, the charges are for the dumpsters and so on and so forth. So what you're saying is drop the $675 event fee. Right?
Just the event fee.
Just the event fee, yeah.
But all the other charges need to be included. If they're asking for us to do additional, requiring us or asking us to do additional work.
Okay. So John made the motion.
Okay.
Didn't you?
I was just explaining.
Sorry, Angel made the motion.
Okay. This time around for...
I'm looking all over for the motion.
And then we drop the pin and we make a decision, Parks and Rec, and
we'll set a policy.
Set a policy.
Yep, set a policy.
I'll second that.
Any more discussion?
So you need to include the facility use agreement in the motion.
Okay, so will you withdraw the motion?
Okay.
And now let's make that motion, read this motion, form a motion dropping the $675 event fee.
So where am I going?
At the bottom of the...
Motion to approve the facility use agreement.
At the very bottom.
States form of motion.
Okay, so motion to approve the facility use agreement authorizing the use of the city property between the city of Othello and the Rotary Club of Othello. Cinco de Mayo committee for the Cinco de Mayo parade celebration on Saturday, May the 4th, 2024.
Then
Minus
the $675 for the event fee.
Thank you.
Second.
Any more discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Hillary, for your comments, your guidance.
Can we kind of get on that policy?
Yeah.
So we don't have to have discussion again.
Well, okay. I was just having a conversation with Tanya today, and I think we're up to now about what were we thinking? 8 to 10 community nonprofit events in the city.
That's good. The more the better.
It is. And we do want to encourage them.
Anything needed to be said from Kurt and Valerie?
I was just going to, we had one person that wanted to speak in the audience, and I just wanted to be devil's advocate. They didn't request to waive these fees. So just devil's advocate. If they're not requesting them, they're okay paying them. So just a comment, devil's advocate. And we had someone in the that wanted to, from the Rotary Club.
Yeah.
Does the Rotary Club want to speak tonight?
The club is co-sponsoring this event with the committee because it's a new committee and they needed our help getting things underway. They received a grant 2 weeks ago for $11,000 from the Rural Development Initiative, so they're well funded. As you said, it's not our intention to request a waiver of the fee. We'll be happy to pay the normal fee for the event. They're well organized. They're energetic. I think they can pull this off and make it a real community event.
Yeah, we appreciate the Rotary Club's help.
But we want to do our part, too.
Yeah. Now I'd like to move to item 4D, request for swimming pool repairs. I had a tour last week, and I think three members of the city council were doing a walkthrough at the swimming pool. And tonight we have with us our public works director, Dirk Carpenter. Do you want to give the city council a report on that walkthrough?
Yeah, I was happy to see council members show up so we could get some eyes on it. We did have, later on in the walkthrough, we did have the contractor show up to explain a little bit to them as well. Looking at the history of the pool, I think it was 5 years after it was installed, we put $200,000+ in it. Kind of shows the craftsmanship that went into when this thing was built. When I started in this position, the staff was telling me that they were losing water in that pool and they didn't know where. So in the past couple of years, I've been monitoring it, and it got worse last year. The way the system works, it's hooked up to our meter and it has a makeup water system in it. And when we filled the pool, there's a vault that is a storage vault for water for the slide in the Lazy River. And we filled it completely full and we turned it on. Within a matter of 20 seconds, it sucked that whole tank dry. Took a week and a half for it to catch up. And every time I checked the meter, it was running. So I don't know if it was a continual run, but it was running most of the time just doing makeup water. So I've been trying to get hold of pool contractors for 18 months, trying to get somebody there to give us estimates, quotes, anything to replace tile that's been broken from the starter blocks, from the swim team. There's various chipped tile along there, and it, you have to have a specialist with that Italian tile that's, and it's expensive, hard to get. So we've been band-aiding it and grinding off the sharp edges for the past year, keep kids from getting cuts. And so we got a contractor in there to replace the tile where the, on the south end where the starting blocks go, and replace it with concrete tile so it won't chip up. And in doing so, we found voids under the deck, some broken pipes in the collection system for the deck. There's a 6-inch pipe that goes down about 2 feet and then turns a 90. It's a non-pressure system. And the back of that 90 has a 1/2-inch crack on the backside. Normally those crack on the inside. So my summation is that was installed that way. It was broke and been installed that way. And it's non-pressure, but it is our filter system. So we're losing water there. And a pea-sized hole in that liner will lose about 800 to 10,000 gallons a day in that pool. And we, every jet, the liner is pulled away from, you know, it's crack all the way around it. Some of the calculations I put together, we're losing anywhere from 60 to 120,000 gallons a day in that pool under that liner. So the structure around that liner, in my assessment, has been sacrificed. So, and the pool contractor feels the same way. Rob and I had our new engineer there looking at it. Feel is in the same boat as me. The unknown is scary underneath that deck. We don't know what's undermined. We know there's voids. We don't know how big. If you look at the south end where the starting blocks are, the top of that wall curves in about 3 inches in the center. It's already moving. When I spoke with the mayor, we looked at what we could do to try and band-aid it and get it in service this year, monitor it. We were able to come up with $42,000 in our budget. Tonight we're requesting $40,000 from another fund to basically put $80,000 in that pool to band-aid it, hopefully get it open. But we're taking a chance, and to be honest with you, whether we can keep it open or how long it's going to last. We don't, you know, there's some uncertainties there. I just want to bring you up to speed on that. Thank you, Council, for spending the time with us out there and taking a look at it.
I'd like to open up the discussion.
What's the worry? Who put the money into it? Is that the mining part of it, or the structural that's going to be built to kind of straighten it all out, or?
Water's going somewhere. That's a lot of water, and anybody that has any knowledge of hydraulics and soils, it moves the fines out of there. I can't see the pipes. Everything's buried. It's all into the deck. The deck's cracking. It's moving. There's definitely some movement and your liner sits on concrete, not solid concrete, but runners. And when you walk out there, it's not supposed to be spongy, and there's places it's really spongy. You can tell it's settled, it's moved.
There's places it feels like you're walking on rocks.
Trampoline.
Loose rocks.
Like a trampoline.
There's air. It's uneven.
Yeah, there's definitely a place that you walk along and you can hear how hollow it is.
Yes.
When you're on
the liner.
Yeah, on the liner.
When you're walking on the liner, you can hear, if you tap your foot, you can hear how hollow it is underneath there. My takeaway from this afternoon was when Kurt said, well, you've got some safety issues, and we're putting $80,000 into a pool, and those safety issues probably for the most part are not going to be addressed. So it's like putting, you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. it's kind of scary because it looks like we need to do something big, and that may mean replacing the pool.
It doesn't feel worth the liability or the potential liability. One of the questions I asked was, would you allow your own child to swim in this pool right now? The answer was no. And outside of how great it is for the short term, we have to think about the long term and the citizens we're all here for, the citizens and the families in this community. And I don't feel comfortable with moving forward with this $40,000 fix. Potentially nothing may happen. It might just be fine for a year, 2 years, whatever the case may be. Well, but I don't think it's worth taking a risk with.
We're losing 100 up to 120,000 gallons a day. That's a lot of water. That's a lot of area that could be compromised underneath that pool. If that pool were to collapse,
it'd be a disaster.
And people in it, it'd be an absolute disaster.
So as far as the undermining part of it, how deep were you going to get into that to go back and do the compaction? And then, because it's a liner pool, you take the liner and then you reroute it. It's pretty much what you do, and then put the liner over it, right?
It's a simple way of saying it. We're going to get a camera and look, small camera, and try and get into the pipes and stuff. My concern is it's not just the liner. If we're losing that kind of water, it's in the pressure pipe somewhere. And if it's in pressure, under pressure, it's really removing material out of there. And I don't know how much of that deck is bridging. And that's my major concern is on the deep end where you have all the hydraulic pressure, if that wall lets go and that deck is undermined, it's coming in too. And if you have public in there, and they got the slide structure that could be compromised, and I'm not trying to be Chicken Little, the sky is falling. I just want to bring you guys aware that there's potential liabilities here. It could last 5-10 years before something happened, or 3 months. I don't know. I mean, it's all unknown. It's hidden. That's what's scary.
In the pressure side of it, there's ways to test that. Have you tested that? If you get your pressure,
That's what we're going to go in and check the pipes as much as we can. But there's some of them you don't have access to.
Because it's crazy when you're talking water, because I was losing, Spencer was talking about pulling here in the past, but I had a hairline crack so big, and my pool's 30,000, and I was losing 10,000 gallons of water every couple of weeks a day.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was saying, it's just on your humidity. I said, dude, 10,000 gallons, man. He has not humidity. So he fought me for a week till I got him over here. And then finally he found where that rip was. It was a new liner, but the seam had come apart.
Sure.
It was just this big, and I was losing massive water. So it could be a simple crack like you're saying on the pipe, and that even if it's not a pressure side of it, you lose a lot of water.
Well, I mean, they don't, not only do they have the cracks in the pipes, then they've got the liners in poor shape around all of the drains, all of the lights, all of the little vents of the pool. You can walk around and see where it's pulled away at least, you know, a quarter inch, 3/4 inch away from those things. And so the water's getting in and underneath that liner. And like they said, it's like filling two pools when they have to fill it.
Proof that it's the base is settling because it's pulling without the water in it and pulling those off of all the joints that it's supposed to be pulled back and tucked into, it's pulled down and there's no water in it. So when you get that water in it and you know, you got air pockets and everything that you're walking on, it's going to pull more and just get worse and worse. And the company that came in and did the repairs on the liner before just used caulking in there. They didn't pull the seams back up. So it's been leaking quite a while ever since they fixed it. But.
So before we pull the plug on it, I think what you said earlier was, I think you do need to get some cameras down the drain lines and examine. There might be a pipe broken. There might be a section of it that, you know, is evident through the camera work that you might be able to see where the problem is, and then make a further evaluation. I guess my next question is because I walked on that liner too, and I stepped on places that I could, there was loose concrete under it. What if we removed the liner and maybe we found a couple of serious cracks, but then we were able to seal them off with gunite and.
Yeah, but I think what we were talking to the pool guy today, and if we took the liner off and gunite the whole thing, it's like a couple million dollars.
$2 million or something like that. Yeah.
So at that point, it's like $2 million, for the gunite, just for the.
Well, you know, and on top of that, the other thing that the contractor said, the subgrade up there is gone. Didn't he know what he said?
The smaller
subgrade at the deep end there is gone.
Yeah. It's washed the fines completely
out. And I mean, that liner, like Mayor said, it's dropping a lot. You know, and this is an $80,000 fix to this repair. You know, how many more hundreds of thousands is it going to take to fix that pool so it's usable?
How good's your insurance?
Exactly, you know. And even removing that liner and fixing it that way, is that even possible to get it done for this season?
I can't guarantee that. Who knows what the schedules are for contractors and whatnot.
Yeah.
That would be pushing it. But I can do further investigation, and we probably should hold off the contractor that's for doing any further repairs until we investigate a little more. Maybe have him help us do a little investigation.
Well, we got to come to a decision soon enough to, we're holding a state swim meet this year in the summer. And we need to let them know ahead of, so that other arrangements can be made.
Yeah.
If we're not going to open the pool.
Yeah.
And as far as liability, if we just opened it up for, you know, a week or 2 week period for the event and got it over with, and then
But that's going to be a minimum of 80 grand. We'd have to finish that job.
Yeah.
So that's a minimum of 80 grand just for the 2 weeks.
Sure.
I'm not good with that.
Okay.
But
we need to look at alternatives, you know.
Yeah.
We need to let the Barracudas know.
I think we need Kurt to do some investigating and bring us back some options. Or at least some information that we can make some decisions on.
And I think sooner than later, because we are in the season where everybody's getting fired up. Yeah.
Could we get some information by the next meeting?
Yeah, we'll have to. I mean,
okay.
We normally open the first week of June, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
First weekend of June.
It is open before the first week, so we can get our lifeguards set, ready, prepared. We do orientations. They do practice rescues, things like that. The pool has to be ready. And then Barracudas also use it for practices.
So we talked about a new pool today too.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to see probably the Parks Committee start discussing a new pool, seeing what kind of numbers that is.
Yeah, you got two issues, this year and the long-term.
Long-term, yep.
Okay, well, we'll come back to the council about stuff for this year. And next year, we'll work with the Park and Rec Committee on some solutions. I think, we could get into this for a long time, but we'll look into some solutions, possibly some funding. We can get some help. That would be really nice. Mm-hmm. So no action on item 4D?
At this time. No,
not at this time.
Okay. Let's now go to our community development director, Ann Henning. And she's going to talk about approving Sand Hill Estates 6 short plat deferral request.
Mayor, I'd like to recuse myself from item E. Approval Sand Hill Estates 6 short plat deferral request.
Okay. Thank you, Angel. Angel Garza is going to recuse himself for a conflict of interest on this particular item. So he's going to remove himself from the dais. And Anne, you have the floor.
Thank you. So this is a short plat, which means that it's approved administratively by staff, but the deferral requests go to Planning Commission for a recommendation and then the council for a decision. So there were 4 requests that were made. One of them, the first one you had already addressed as a public works design standards. I included it just because they asked for it in the letter and didn't want there to be any confusion. That one's already addressed. So the other 3 were deferral of extending utilities through the full plat. And so what they're proposing is only to extend for each phase as they serve the buildings. And so the recommendation of staff and the Planning Commission is to grant that deferral with a covenant and that the utilities be extended by the 6th apartment building or September 30th, 2029, whichever comes first. The second request is they ask to defer dedicating the easements that those utilities would be in. And the recommendation of the Planning Commission and staff was to deny that. It's much easier to track it if it's on the plat rather than as a separate document later on. If it turns out that the utilities are not going where expected, then we can make the change at that time. But at least this way, if all goes well, we're set up the best way possible. Then the third request was for the design and construction of street and utility easements for 11th Avenue, which would be the east boundary of the plat. They're starting the building at the 7th Avenue end of the plat, and so they won't need that access until later. And so again, the recommendation is at the time of after the 6th apartment building or September of 2029. And that also there would be a covenant that would guarantee that.
There won't be looped.
Not yet.
So isn't that a fire flow problem?
They would need to provide fire flow. So if they can't do it by not looping it, then they would have to loop it now.
So is that going to make 11th Avenue a dead end?
Currently, yes.
So don't they have to have, doesn't there have to be a cul-de-sac or something for a fire truck to get in there and turn around, or a garbage truck, or?
So I'm trying to think how many lots there are right now. They must have had to do covenant on the previous plat that they would do the turnaround. They must have a gravel turnaround currently.
There's a gravel turnaround in of 11th right now.
Okay. So that would stay in place until this. Maybe I'm answering this badly. So it would stay like it is now. And then when they're completing it, after the sixth building or in 2029, there would have to be, if the design at that point is a dead end, they would have to do a permanent cul-de-sac.
If I can speak on that too, they're, in order for them to get a C of O, they're gonna have to provide, fire department's not gonna sign off on it unless they have access as well, even as they move through these phases and turnarounds. So.
So we basically have three recommendations. Two of them are to grant the requests, and that's for the municipal extending the defer to extending the municipal utilities, and then to defer the design and construction of the street and utility improvements, and then denying the request to defer the dedication of easements because it's easier to track if it's on the plat. And we can, and that can be changed later down the road if the utilities go in a different place. So that's, okay.
Okay.
Well, I guess, has the fire department reviewed this?
I sent it to the fire department. I didn't get any comments back.
Okay. All right, council, you do have those three options before you. What would you like to do?
I say that we do what they're recommending, is grant the two and deny the one, and so that it can be tracked by the plat.
Okay, so I need three separate motions.
I'll make the motion.
Do it all in one.
Can we do it all in one?
All in one.
Granting, okay. And denying? Okay.
I'll make the motion to grant the request to defer the extending municipal utilities through the plat until completion of the six apartment building or September 30th, 2029, whichever comes first. And number two, deny the request to defer dedication of easements for municipal utilities through the plat. And number three, grant the request to defer design and construction of the street and utility improvements to 11th Avenue until the completion of the sixth apartment building or September 30th, 2029, whichever comes first.
The deferral is guaranteed with a covenant?
Yes.
Okay.
On both of those.
Do I have a second? Thank you, Gina.
I'll second.
Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now I'd like to move to item 4F, which is a discussion on the portable sidewalk vendors. And tonight, our community development director, Ann, is going to wade through this agenda item.
Thank you. So this is kind of a follow-up of the food truck ordinance that you adopted not too long ago. The Planning Commission moved on from there to addressing push carts, portable vendors. This is kind of an emerging issue, seeing it in other states, seeing it around town here. The current business license code has a definition of a mobile vendor, which is one who sells on a street or a sidewalk, but then there's no regulations in the rest of that code for what has to happen with that kind of a vendor. So this draft code is an attempt to address some of the issues. Planning Commission spent, I think it was four meetings trying to hash through this. It was even more difficult than the food trucks. So hopefully we've had a chance to take a look at it, get some opinions about it. There were a few things that I pointed out for you where there was some difference of opinion. Specifically, code enforcement wanted the business license to go directly to the person so that it would be only one person that would have the license, because she said she can't issue a ticket unless the person needs a license. So, but the Planning Commission wanted a business to be able to grow by adding a second cart or additional carts. So one way that I thought of that could be addressed is if we have like a two-step process where you have a business license for the business, but then you have a vendor license for the individual people selling. And that would be similar to what we do for the door-to-door solicitors. Each of those solicitors needs a solicitor's license in addition to the business license. The downside of that is that's more regulation and more burdensome for a business to be able to go through that. The other area was that the fire chief did recommend vendors not being allowed within 25 feet of a building. And that seemed to be based on his concerns about cooking next to a building and under an overhang. But he said, just keep it simple, just required of everybody. But the Planning Commission didn't want to restrict everybody when only a subset of people needed to meet that standard. There was a lot of discussion about, should a portable vendor like this be allowed on an undeveloped lot? And what they compromised on was limiting that to one vendor. Something I wanted to point out, just to be aware that the draft as written would allow a mobile vendor, which is one who is moving and not set up in a spot within residential zones. And that was something that came out of the public's discussion with the planning commissioners. I guess I'll stop there. I don't know. We can go through it, line by line, or you can ask questions if you have questions of what you've read. And I wanted to bring this as a discussion because I know this is the first time this is being brought to you. And so I wanted to get some input before we move it any further on this.
So on the code enforcement issue, is there a way that whoever the owner is that applies for the business license has to put their name on there so that the ticket would be issued to the business owner, no matter who was pushing the cart? Or,
and I don't understand all the nuances of the code enforcement. And so I can't really answer that, but that would be a
question. That was my thought, is like, why isn't the name, if the name of the person who owns the businesses, whether it's one or two carts, is on there, then the ticket should go to that person. But I don't, like you said, I don't know what exactly the nuances are with code enforcement.
I think she discussed on page one of the agenda memo, she said that she recommended each person vending needs to have a license rather than to have the license apply to a business which might have multiple carts. She felt that in order to issue an infraction, a license or permit must be issued to the person who's actually selling and in front of her. That's what her, that was what her take was. She says a sidewalk vendor, portable vendor business license is issued to an individual, not the, to the vending vehicle or stand. Each individual person should have a license. But the Planning Commission wanted them to allow them to have more than one cart, but he, but one person can't run more than one cart.
Mm-hmm. But a family can, a husband and a wife can.
Yeah.
They can run. I think Ann's solution to given this, this, what did you call it? A solicitor path?
A vendor's.
A ven-
it would be a vendor license.
I think that's a great idea.
I was hoping there was a way we could just, you could attach their, the business owner's name to it and be able to do it that way. But it doesn't sound like that's kind of what Heather is looking for.
She'd have to look up licenses. Yeah. And
you'd have to have some way to identify each card.
Mm-hmm.
And then that number would be attached to the owner.
Yeah.
10 cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you had them, if and the number has to be displayed prominently.
But those that pass
mm-hmm.
would cover that also. Because it, yeah. the license for that pass would have, I know it's not a path, I keep forgetting what you call it, sorry.
So we'd have a vendor license and you'd have a You're business right. license. So each vendor would have their own vendor license.
And they would have to be displayed on that cart, right?
Well, all of their licenses should be displayed on the cart, whether it's the business so license, business license, vendor's license, the health license, health department license.
Right.
Yeah, those should all be displayed. Which I believe they cover in the ordinance is that everything has to be displayed prominently. I read through the ordinance. I thought it was very well put together.
There are things within the ordinance that is, are going to limit
where they can go
actually set up.
Yes, there's a lot of things that limit that, and for good reason, you know, and making sure that there's 4 feet of passable sidewalk. They can't be out on the street or in the right of way, blocking traffic, things of that nature. They can't be within so many feet of schools, fire hydrants.
So one thing I should mention, the current stationary vendor requirements in the business license chapter for somebody that has a stand or something does limit them to 1,000 feet from another vendor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's in the current code. This new code doesn't have that kind of a limitation. So you could have more of them together or multiple potentially on a site. Just to be clear, that's the way it's written now. So
unless it's a
special event, it would be different.
Or didn't you say that they were limited to one per lot? For a vacant lot, yeah. So we don't end up with a lot full of vendors.
That could potentially happen on a site that's not vacant, though, the way it is written now. We have had an application for someone that wants to do something like that.
Like a food court or a food block.
Food court, flea market.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I read through it. I thought it was very well thought out and very well done. I liked a lot of it. I was kind of concerned about Heather's thing, but I think if you do the vendors and you make that, you know, maybe they have to number their carts, and if they have multiple carts and that has to be displayed and that's attached to the.
You just have to display it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is this the first ordinance of this type? I mean, for portable vendors in the city of Othello?
So we do have the existing business license code that defines mobile vendors, but then there's also in it, it says mobile vendors as stationary vendors. So there's been some regulation of it, but not the ones that are truly mobile, that are, you know, walking around with their cart. There isn't.
And those are regulation been, of that. And becoming more and more prevalent around town.
This is a work in progress anyway. We can make changes to it as we go along.
And we likely will have to, because it's hard to get it right the first time when you're doing something new.
I think it's good to have something in place.
Well, and it looks like
specifically, you know, addresses this.
Yeah. And it looks like you pulled from like City of Richland, City of Yakima, Chino, California, some different ordinances that have had this type of thing in place. And right. I like that too.
Nothing from California is good anyway. So let's not even use that as an example. Okay, so you need a motion?
I don't need a motion. I just need a direction. And so I can work on the language for adding the vendor license portion of it. I think would address the code enforcement issue. I'll, you know, run through that with Heather to make sure that that works for her. But then, I mean, it sounds like generally there's agreement about how it's written, so I can bring it back as an ordinance with those changes next time.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's go now to item five, our unfinished business. Do you have any unfinished business tonight?
New business. Our committee is not going to attend the meeting tomorrow. I think you have a letter in your packet. Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
Okay. Also, I want to remind you that your PDC, you have until April 15th to get your PDC filing, your Form F-1. Just did mine last weekend, so.
Mine last night.
So I just want to remind council you that's a requirement as an elected official to complete a Form F-1. It's filed with the, you can do it, it's now done online with the Public Disclosure Commission. And then item 7A, council will also receive the Planning Commission minutes from last month in March. We'll also receive an Othello Police Department report for March and a Building and Planning Department report for March. And with no further business to come before City Council tonight, I'll adjourn tonight's meeting at 7:22 p.m.